that's what I've really been working with lately in our 200 hour and 300 hour trainings, is talking about the difference between teaching one-on-ones in group classes, mm-hmm. which is a very different experience.
Yeah.
And so maybe if you're somebody that really likes that intimate one-on-one, like almost more of like a life coach kind of a vibe with yoga included, you know, that could be a path for you. So there's so many different facets you can do as a yoga career. You know, you could be a retreat leader. Like there's so many different things.
Right.
Like maybe you're someone that likes it a little more social, a little more lighthearted, you know, that would be like a retreat kind of an idea. So there's lots of different choices that can manifest for you.
Yeah. Hello, and welcome to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, the host of the podcast, a yoga and meditation teacher and philosophy lover. Each week, you will hear eye-opening interviews with the different teachers of the Andara Yoga Institute, located in beautiful Baja, Mexico, along with other teachers that pass through here. This life-changing knowledge shared through authentic, heartfelt communication will help you live a happier, more fulfilled, and connected life. Let's dive in. Hello, welcome back to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, and today I have the lovely Amber Young.
Thank you.
Amber is a lead teacher here at Andara. She's been here for many, many years. Her parents teach here. Her sister teaches here. Even her brother works here. And she's just an incredible teacher, and she is also the owner of La Dicha Studio here in Pescadero.
Mm-hmm.
So welcome to the podcast, Amber.
Thank you so much, Yael. It's nice to be here.
It's nice to have you. I thought today we could speak about having a career as a yoga teacher and the whole process that goes along with that. It's something that I hear a lot of people wondering about. People who are yoga teachers and also people who are considering becoming yoga teachers. And I know you have an interesting path. You just told me that you've been teaching for 15 years.
Yeah.
So maybe you can kind of share a bit of your story.
Yeah. I think on our last podcast, we talked a little bit about how, you know, I worked in the kitchen and in the office at Andara before I started being a teacher. And so, you know, the person, I have two people that I think are probably like the biggest inspiration motivators in my life that have kind of brought me to this place. And one of them is my mother. Just from like teaching me from a child all these things in my life that I didn't really realize were like yogic principles or yogic lifestyle. You know, it was just the way she raised me. And
like
so
what?
Like she used Satya as a way of kind of like, I don't want to use the word like discipline, but she would talk to us about how our actions made her feel. You know, it wasn't like, oh, you did this wrong. Like, why do you do this to me? It was like, I feel sad when you guys blah, 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 you know, just always lots of love and compassion with like interacting with animals, other people, and just like the teachings, you know, just like being true to yourself, you know, having integrity and honesty as like a value in your life. And a lot of different paths teach the same things, right? So I didn't really know that this was like something she'd studied and like, you know, practiced. Mm-hmm. But it's also just how she naturally is.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you're kind of this kind of person, you're drawn to these practices and philosophies.
Yeah, exactly. So she really was like, you know, planted that seed unconsciously in me probably before I was even born, most likely.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about your root chakra is developed in the womb. It's 6 months prior to your birth. You know, the root chakra is developing in your mother's womb. So the state and the mindset that your mother is in while you're developing as a fetus is the beginning of the root chakra.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting to think about.
Yeah.
Like your sense of security and belonging.
Yep.
And your like rootedness in the world starts from the state that your mother is in while creating you.
Yeah.
While she's baking you.
Yeah, exactly. During that process of gestation, like while the baby is in the womb, like the state of the mother is directly affecting the development of your root chakra.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really wild. I got a little bit of goosebumps.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm a prenatal yoga teacher, and so I like to think about those things, and I talk about them when we do workshops and things around that. And but so I always kind of think like maybe she planted that seed like a long time ago, and she kind of has told me that she always had this dream, you know, with like me and Sarasvati. I mean, she named my sister Sarasvati, so like...
For whoever doesn't know, it's a goddess from the yogic philosophy. Yeah,
The Hindi tradition. Yeah. Sarasvati is the goddess of philosophy, music, and culture. And so that very much embodies my sister. And then Craig Perkins, really. Like Craig Perkins,
co-founder owner of Yandara.
Exactly. Co-founder of Yandara. he is a magic maker, Craig. And he sees potential in people way before they even do. And he like asked me twice and I told him no. And then the second time I agreed. And so I really feel like Craig and my mom and just Christopher and John and everybody that created Yandara, really. I mean, if Yandara wasn't here, I don't know if this would have been the path that my life gave me. So thank you, Yandara.
It would have been any other way.
Yeah.
It couldn't be any other way.
Right. So that was probably like the very beginning. And then I've naturally always been like kind of like somebody that can easily speak in front of a group. I've always kind of been like a leader, I guess you could say, in different formats, which has been something I've pushed against my whole life, which is interesting. But you know, even within my family dynamic, I'm one of six siblings. My mom had five and my dad had six. So I have one younger sister, even younger than my sister Sarasvati. Different mom. But I was kind of somehow always the like, the one that was like getting everybody together and like making everything happen. You know what I mean? Yeah. So even like when I was young, you know, my family, I'm not sure if it's just like my nature, but I got like pushed into these roles, not like pushed in a negative way, but encouraged or just like asked from the universe to be in various roles throughout my whole life where I'm like a manager or a, or some type of a leader, some type of like the person who's kind of like guiding others and like training others. Even as like a waitress, I was always the one who trained all the new waitresses, right? I was like the lead waitress. It was like something that's so different from the yogic world, but my life has always pushed me into those things. And so yoga has been kind of like the first one that I embraced as like a leader role, you know, that I felt empowered, not bossy. Like, I don't like being bossy, but I naturally can be very bossy.
That's probably like the polarity, right?
Yeah.
Of leader and bossy. Yes. Like, where can you find the middle of it?
Yeah. And so I felt like, you know, teaching really helped me establish the difference between being a boss and being a leader, right? And about kind of just encouraging people and offering them examples of the way things could be, you know, the way they could teach or what type of philosophy might work for them in their lives. And and so as I started to teach, you know, I trained at Yandara in 2008. I started working as a staff member in 2008. And then in 2009, Craig asked me to be a teacher. And so that's when I started. And I just, yeah, the way that my life is I don't push really anything. Like, it's not that I don't have like goals and aspirations, but I'm not somebody that's like goal oriented is in the fact that like when I complete this, then I'm going to be like, you know, really good. Like, I don't know what the words I'm looking for, but like, you know, I don't need to have a big, giant, fancy house and have a really nice car. And, you know, I have a house that's comfortable and nice for me. And I have a car that works and it's great and it doesn't break down. But it's not like a 2020 or a 2023 car. You know, it's like 2010.
Yeah. Well, those are the cars here in Baja. That's
the normal life. But I was thinking about the practice of being a yoga teacher and the practice of being a yogi. I had this conversation with a student, and then I brought it up with my mom after, and we were talking. And where it came from was we had a group, and there was a little bit of challenge happening with, we felt the amount of effort us teachers were putting in and the amount of showing up that the students were giving us back. Mm. And there was a discrepancy there in the amount of energy output that we were giving and the amount of receptivity that was coming back. And so I decided to just talk to the group about it. And a little bit of it came around being protective over my mom. I was working with my mom and I was feeling like the group wasn't really understanding how much she's been through lately, mm-hmm. and that I needed them to show up more like adults and like be there of service, right? And so I was talking to them. I was like, you know, ancient yogis, they would go to an ashram and you would be of service. And your whole day was pretty much an act of service. There was cleaning and sweeping and carrying things and moving things. And you would spend time with like the master, you know, and in certain ways, I kind of feel like my mom is that at Yandara, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I was feeling like I needed them to be helping her more with the like manual labor aspect of the training, mm-hmm. like carrying and moving things. Mm-hmm. And so I talked to him about this idea of like, I think I used the word discipline, but what I, in hindsight, what I really meant by that was like, consistency.
In what way?
In showing up. Like, and for me, the practice of yoga is consistency. Mm-hmm. And it's devotion, really. And it's dedication. Yeah. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for, is dedication. Mm-hmm. And it's in all these different levels. So it's like at the ashram, you would show up, you'd clean your hands, feet, and face. You'd clean the space that you're practicing in. And then for the rest of the day, you'd be cleaning the community areas, right?
It's also kind of like a reverence to the space.
To the space, exactly.
And to the practice and the philosophy that you're doing, mm-hmm. or that you're taking part in.
Yeah.
And that you're learning, like taking it and realizing that it's a privilege to learn these sacred practices and sacred texts that enlightened beings have passed on to us. It's not like a trendy thing that you do because it's cool or because you have a cool yoga outfit on.
Yes. Mm. I love that. Really good, really good words, Yael. Yeah. Exactly. And so for me, like I think about my career, like that's what we're talking about, is like being a yoga teacher as a career.
Yeah.
And so I think about it as, you have to be willing to be patient and to really put in the dedication. And so, you know, I was an assistant teacher at Yandara working with other teachers only for years. Mm-hmm. I wasn't allowed to teach. Mm-hmm. Not like not allowed, but you know what I mean? I wasn't ready yet, mm-hmm. to be teaching on my own without being in a classroom with another teacher who's already been, you know, working for a while at Yandara. And so it's just kind of like understanding that like I didn't assume the moment I finished my teaching certification that I was going to be like the lead teacher at Yandara, because there's a certain amount of dedication and consistency within your practice, within your lifestyle, right? Mm-hmm. To just work into that.
Yeah, I think you brought up here an important subject, which is first, if you want to become a teacher, be willing to start at the basics. Mm-hmm. So you started working, like you said, in the kitchen and around on the grounds and all of that. And a friend of mine, or I've heard a few people that started working at the front desk at a yoga studio. Mm-hmm. And then honestly, one of my favorite teachers in Tel Aviv right now started cleaning the yoga studio.
Yeah.
She's one of my favorite teachers. She's incredible. And yet she started just by finding a way to get into the community, get to know the teachers and the owners of the studios and go to the classes and, you know, continue on your path and slowly find your way in there. So I think that's a really important entryway for somebody to think about. Let's back it up a little bit, because I want to ask you a question that I hear a lot in terms of, like, I hear a lot of people saying, I was thinking of doing a yoga teacher training, but I don't know if I'm ready. So what would you say about that? Do you think there's a point when you're ready? What do you need to do before a yoga teacher training to be ready for it? What's your take on that?
I hear that one so much too. And even like usually one of the first questions I ask on like day one of a 200-hour teacher training is like, what motivated you to come here? And do you want to teach after? And the interesting thing is, I feel like 70 to 80% of the people say they don't know. And granted, I understand that because they haven't like actually started teaching. Like I asked them before we've even done any like little practice teaching or anything, to just see how they feel about that. And then there's some people that are like, oh yeah. And they came and they already have a job lined up and all these things. But majority of people don't. Mm-hmm. Majority of people, at least that come to Yandara, are, I find, just kind of like exploring that avenue as a career and even just as like a life path, right? As a way to just live. Mm-hmm. And most people, I'd say like 99% of people, are really good at it, you know? And they come, at least the ones that come to Yandara, I feel like they feel the inspiration and the empowerment of being a teacher. And it's really like you get high, you know what I mean? It's like a natural high. Mm-hmm. It totally is. Mm-hmm. When you're in that flow state and you're not thinking and stressing, it's like a natural high. You know, it's like dancing or something, because you're just in that flow state.
But what if you have kind of the desire, but you're not in that flow? You're not feeling the high. You're feeling stressed.
You're feeling
fear.
The stress still. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, I know, that takes a while. It takes a while to get to that. But I would say as a way, okay, so to think about your questions, like logistically from the very beginning.
Like how physically fit do you need to be? Do you need to be extremely knowledgeable in the philosophy before you come? Like what would you say are the criteria for somebody to be able to sign up for a 200 hour?
I think they need to have gone to like a regular amount of yoga classes for, you know, I think the legal requirement or something is like 6 months, but I'd say, you know, a year or two really gives you an idea of like how much you like this, how much you want this to be a part of your life. And sometimes maybe it's just a supplemental income, but if you want it to be like a career path, like I chose, and more like it chose me, but you just want to find a teacher in your area before you come to a training that inspires you and makes you feel seen and makes you feel like you are maybe progressing in your physical practice of asana. Because those are the things that I really inspired by when I go to a different teacher, you know, when I'm the student, is somebody that makes me feel seen, somebody that makes me feel cared for, and somebody that kind of pushes me. And that's our job as a teacher, is to just push a couple of degrees past your comfort zone that you can do on your own, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're advancing and you're growing. And so if you find a teacher like that in your area and you're just like really jazzed up and feeling super inspired, I think that's a great way. Mm-hmm. You know, all the philosophy and the yoga teachings, it's nice if maybe you have just like a general little understanding, but we do cover that. And I feel like as you grow as a yoga teacher, you're just going to like look for that more, I guess would be the word, you know, in your own life, in your studies, in other trainings that you would do after just a basic 200 hour. So if there's any desire, like if you're a natural teacher, that's the other thing I always ask is like, are you a teacher of any kind? Mm-hmm. Education, mm-hmm. another type of physical activity. Mm-hmm.
Or just naturally inclined.
To teaching. Yeah. Then I would suggest that would be a good choice for you. Mm-hmm. You know, people that feel comfortable speaking in front of a room.
That's rare though.
It's really rare.
Now I feel very comfortable speaking in front of a room, but I was shaking, physically shaking before my first classes, like the first 20 classes.
Yeah. I think we all are too. I remember just like pouring sweat. I could just feel the sweat just like dripping down my sides. Like for the first like year, I feel like I taught. You know, it was just like, you just get so hot. It's like you're so... But I mean, I know it's hard for me. I have to like back it up. I've been teaching for so many years. I'm like, oh yeah, okay. But not that like, you necessarily, because like my sister was like you. I mean, she was just so shy. And it's funny, like my mom is this balance of like my sister and I feel like she's that in between where like she's kind of like actually fairly shy, but she can really just like bring it and be the star of the show, you know?
Definitely.
And my sister's like you. She's like trained herself to do that, you know? She's like worked at it. Mm-hmm. And so, and she's really good. And like, I feel like you're a really good teacher too, you know? It's just like, don't be afraid. Maybe one-on-ones is your thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like maybe that's what I've really been working with lately in our 200 hour and 300 hour trainings, is talking about the difference between teaching one-on-ones in group classes, which is a very different experience. And so maybe if you're somebody that really likes that intimate one-on-one, like almost more of like a life coach kind of a vibe with yoga included, you know, that could be a path for you. So there's so many different facets you can do as a yoga career. You know, you could be a retreat leader. Like there's so many different things.
Right.
Like maybe you're someone that likes it a little more social, a little more lighthearted, you know, that would be like a retreat kind of an idea. There's lots of different choices that can manifest for you.
Yeah. We'll get to that in just a moment. Okay. I just kind of want to share my experience because I just think like if you would have asked me 6 or 7 years ago if I would have been where I am right now, I would never have guessed. So I never went to yoga class. I've been doing yoga since I was like 16 or 17. And my mom took me to my first yoga class.
Aww.
And I'm going to be turning 30 in a week.
Yay.
So that's 13 years already that I'm practicing.
Good job.
But I was practicing at like the gym. I didn't know that I was going to Ashtanga or Vinyasa or Yin. I just was going to yoga.
Yeah.
Like I had no idea what kind of yoga I was practicing. If there was philosophy, it was very light. And the reason I chose to do a yoga teacher training, I did not think for 1 minute that I'm going to be a yoga teacher. I thought maybe like as like a side income, like maybe now and then I'll do classes. Like I didn't think about it at all. I was doing interior design at the time. And I did it because I wanted to go traveling and I was afraid to travel without a plan. So I was like, okay, I'll sign up for the training. I'm interested in the philosophy. I'll learn more. That's great. And I'll have like a place to stay and a base to go from. And then I can continue from there. Needless to say, the 200 hour was a life-changing experience for me. And as kind of similar to your experience, I felt like it just became possible. I didn't really, I mean, I did have to explore into it, but from India, where I did the training, I went to Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. And in Sri Lanka, again, I signed up for like this volunteer program so that I would have a place to stay. And the first weekend, I signed up for that program for 3 weeks. The first weekend, me and a group of the people there went to this town nearby to like a hostel kind of campground, very similar to Yandara actually, yeah. But not a yoga school, just like a hostel place. And at dinner, like in the conversation, somehow somebody across the table mentioned that I just finished a yoga teacher training, and the owner of the hostel heard it and he said, "You're a yoga teacher." And I said, "Yeah, I am, of course." Like 1 week ago. Yeah. And then he offered me to stay there and teach yoga, like stay there for free and teach for free. And that's honestly the ultimate combination. Yeah. Yeah. For somebody just finishing a yoga teacher training, like getting experience, not even getting paid for it, but being able to teach classes,
yeah,
is the best thing you could ask for. And I did kind of like have a wish in my mind that if something like that would happen, it would be amazing. But it just showed up in my life in such an effortless way that for me, it was kind of like, oh, maybe the universe is intentionally guiding me towards this path. Because I feel like when you're on a path that's right for you, the door is kind of open. You don't have to push. And when you have to push too hard and the door doesn't open, that's not your door. And we kind of spoke about this in the last episode, like the flow, the river.
Yeah.
And I always, I try to really live in that way. And then when I realized that was happening and it was so effortless, I kind of went back to Israel and continued with this. I realized that I can't. I was like, okay, I'll do interior design and yoga. And then I realized I can't. I need to like build a career right now. I need to choose where I need to put my effort.
Yeah.
Do I want to put my effort into building a career as an interior designer because I was living in Germany and I was going back to Israel? Or do I want to put my effort into being a yoga teacher? And when I really looked inside and I thought about what do I really want to do, what do I actually resonate with, of course it was the yoga.
Yeah.
And just one more thing that I want to say, like in terms of my physical ability before that first training, I was not in shape at all. I was going to yoga classes for many, many years, but once a month, like every 2 months, then I would go like for 3 weeks consecutively, but then I would stop. Like I was not consistent at all. And the training, the immersion of being 21 days in a training, practicing every morning and just learning the philosophy and everything behind it, that gave me the strength to be more consistent with the practice. So I just want to say, like, you don't have to be able to do a handstand and like these amazing tricks in order to go to do a training.
No. That's really funny, yeah, because I actually, very similar to you, really, really similar to you. Like, I didn't have a consistent practice here and there before I moved to Yandara and did the training. Exactly the same, like really kind of here and there. It had been in my family, but it wasn't like we didn't do asana all that much, you know? We did all like the other things.
Yeah.
And that's really great. I love that. And same thing for me. I was like couldn't do any headstand, handstand, anything. You know what I mean? I'm like, what's the name of down dog? You know, like, like all of that. And I love that. What really gave me my consistency was the training as well. Mm-hmm. Was the 200-hour training at Yandara. And I remember after that, I think I practiced every single morning. This was before I had kids. Every single morning for probably like 2.5 years straight.
Me too.
You know?
Me too. It really gave me this push after the training. Yeah. Same like you. Like I continued, I think, probably maybe like 2 years.
Yeah.
Maybe a little less than 2 years. Every morning physical asana practice.
Yeah.
Which if you would, like me 3 years before that, would have never believed you.
Yeah, me too. Right?
That I could be this consistent with a physical practice.
I love that. Yeah, it's so inspiring. I know, it's really inspiring.
When I think about it, I'm like, me? Yeah,
me? This is me. I know. I love that. Exactly. So like, just give it a shot, really.
Yeah.
And the doors opening. Oh my gosh. I swear, so many students contact me after the training and they're like, they tell me like your exact story. Like they're like, I went to this place. This, I was talking about how I just did yoga. Cause it happened to me too. I was like at the beach and I'm like, oh, I just did a training. And this lady's like, oh, will you come give me and my friend classes? And I'm like, okay. You know, like yeah. it just happens, you know, the doors just open.
Hey, I'm quickly interrupting the episode to extend an invitation. If you are interested in deepening into any of the subjects we talk about on the podcast, we offer many different experiences on our beautiful grounds here in Baja, Mexico. From 9-day modules such as sound healing and yoga nidra, to breath and meditation, as well as 200- or 300-hour yoga teacher trainings, and many different shorter retreats. Check out our website, yandara.com, to see all the information about the different experiences. Let's get back to the episode. And speaking about being a yoga teacher as a career, I find that when you're kind of in the river, in yeah. the flow on your path, then, you know, we can't deny that we need to make a living.
Yes.
In order to sustain this as a career.
Yeah.
And I find that the universe really like kind of supports you financially mm-hmm. in order to be able to continue doing it in a sustainable way. So we spoke about the fact that kind of when you're on this path that is your river, your flow, your dharma in a way, like your path, the doors open. We do have to do the work. We have to like be open and receptive and also keeping ourselves in a state that is prepared to receive the opportunities that show up. So that guy at the hostel offering me this job, I could have easily said to myself, I'm not ready. I just finished. I'm not going to do it. And similar to you, mm-hmm. when I went back to Israel, I started sending resumes to yoga studios. I don't know why I was so bold, because like I just finished a 200 hour. Why would any studio give me a class? Which, because studios give classes to experienced teachers.
Yeah.
But one studio answered my email. I went to a meeting and the guy told me, okay, like you can start by subbing for other teachers, which is the way that you get into a studio.
Most everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then he said, listen, I kind of have a feeling about you. I'm going to give you a class. And I couldn't believe it. I had already started doing a few private classes. I think like 2 or 3 private classes with friends of friends. And I couldn't believe that he gave me a class. So similar to Craig, kind of encouraging you. And I was so nervous that I think a few days before the class, I wrote him a message and I told him, listen, I think I'm not ready. I don't think I can do it. Like, let's wait a little bit. And luckily, he said to me, El, you're ready. You have to do it. Like, you better show up on Saturday, 10 a.m. And of, as I said, like I was super nervous in the first few classes, but I am eternally grateful for him for really nudging me and believing in me in this way. So I think that's another way that the universe kind of encourages us
yeah.
on the way. So let's talk about being a full-time yoga teacher. Because as you started to mention, there's a lot of different ways that you can be a yoga teacher.
Yeah.
Maybe you can kind of explain the different ways or
yeah.
talk about them.
Yeah. So there's, you know, there's studio teachers. So you have, like you were saying, like you have a Saturday class at 10 a.m. and you have like a regular class, right? At a studio. Maybe you don't own the studio.
Maybe you can also say like how much
each one pays?
It's hard to say, like, depending on what part of the world you live in.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'd say, like, you know, I'm from the U.S., West Coast. So yoga classes are anywhere from $18 to $25 a person mm-hmm. on average.
A person?
Per person. $18 to $25.
No, like, how much does a yoga teacher get?
That, again, is subject to the business that you work for. So as far as I know, the kind of like most common ways are you make a percentage. So mm-hmm. often like it's 60-40, mm-hmm. you know. Generally for newer teachers, the studio takes 60 and you get 40 because they're doing all the advertising and they have the student body built up. Ready? Mm-hmm. If you were doing like that same kind of a thing where you're like, I'm going to do a Saturday class, but you did it in a public setting, like, for example, a park or a beach or, you know, a place that's like open for public use, then you would be taking all of that.
100%.
100%. Often what that is donation based. I've seen a lot of people do donation based. Mm-hmm. So that would be kind of like your very first thing. And like you even said that, like you just, I have a lot of people that said, okay, you know, Saturdays, you know, by the park at 10, we're going to be doing vinyasa flow or whatever style you like. Then getting a job as a sub at the studio, 40, 60 is usually as you start. Other studios have like a cap where you make a certain amount, like you get certain amount per class, mm-hmm. right? You make like 150, you know, I almost said pesos. Like, I was almost at 150 pesos, but I'm like, okay, not, we'll not talk pesos.
But it's not 150, it's like $30.
Yeah. I meant like 150 pesos. So yes, you would make like a percent, like a cap amount, like you teach 1 hour, you get $30. Yeah. Then often that's up to like 10 students. So every additional student on top of 10, you make like $5 or something like
and
that.
And that really is like per studio.
Let's per studio.
Let's say it like just shortly.
I know.
You know?
So.
Okay. Next type.
Next type would be probably a retreat person, you know? And retreat people, you set your price. So you set the price that you want to get. Mm-hmm. And how much you have to pay the place that you're renting to hold your retreats.
Would you say you need to have like some experience as a teacher before you start doing retreats or?
You would want to have experience holding retreats, like, because they can be done all over different to yoga. You know what I mean? Like there's different retreats for all different type things. So they're kind of like two different professions. It's like being a retreat person, someone who's like really good at offering retreats and someone who's really good at yoga may not be able to do both of those things. But then every once in a while, there's the person that can do both.
But yoga retreat is yoga.
Well, no, because I mean, you can go on a retreat for like, you know, surfing and there's no yoga included.
Right. We're talking about yoga.
I know, but I'm saying like you have to have two skills to hold retreats. You have to be able to develop and create a business plan for a retreat and teach.
Yeah.
And so I'm saying some people naturally, I do not have that ability to just do a retreat and like,
I wouldn't say you don't have, I think you can develop it.
Man, I am so bad at business. You guys out there in the world, I'm very bad at business. I'm very good at teaching yoga, but I'm not very good at like being businessy. So what I'm trying to say is if you're somebody that's really good at business and you're a yoga teacher, maybe this is the path you want to take. That's what I'm trying to get to is like, if you're a naturally business minded person, retreats might be a really good way for you to go because you already have that skill set and then you add teaching yoga to it. And usually the yoga aspect of a retreat is like one or two classes a day max.
I have to say that my view is different on that.
Do you?
Yeah. First of all, in Israel, there's a huge retreat culture.
Oh, nice.
And I would say most yoga teachers make retreats.
Yeah.
And I'm going to host a retreat now when I go back to Israel. It's going to be 3 yoga classes.
Wow.
2 meditations, a workshop that I'm leading. So like 2 full days full of yoga philosophy, meditation, like all of that. It's kind of like a Yandara experience, but shorter.
Yeah. That's different than the way we do the retreats here. There's a lot more like downtime.
there is going to be downtime as well, but it's really about like, you know, practicing.
I like that. I like that style of retreat, you know?
And, you do have to be kind of business oriented because really it's about marketing.
Yeah.
You know, because you can be an incredible yoga teacher and have an incredible schedule and workshops and all of that set, like set up. But if not enough people hear about it, then
it's not lucrative.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think, what did I want to say? And I think that also maybe just like just a small little point here is that in Israel, at least most of the people that come to your retreats are the people that come to your studio classes or if you have like outdoor classes, private students and all of that.
Yeah. That I feel like that's for most people, that's how it is. You know what I mean? Like often people will teach, like a friend of mine, Chelsea Winters, she owns a studio in Colorado.
She's been on the podcast.
Yeah. Anahata, I think is the name of her studio. And so she's really good at doing retreats, but she also has a studio and a lot of her people that come to the retreats, like you're saying, are the people that go to her studio.
Yeah.
So those two kind of those two facets of being a career yoga teacher do really go nicely together.
Yeah.
The one-on-ones would probably be like the next type of thing. Mm-hmm. I've been really getting into that the last couple of years because I've always been like a big group teacher trainer kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And with my studio, I've been able to do one-on-ones and it's been such an amazing experience for me. I've really seen the difference in the two. Like, the one-on-ones is like, it's almost more like a conversation. It's kind of like what we're having, you know, it's like this back and forth. They're giving you information. You're talking back and forth. You're learning how to help their individual body, you know, like progress in their yoga practice or relieve pain. And so it's like you build this really intimate relationship on these one-on-ones. So if you're somebody that really likes this personal connection and does well in that setting, and maybe being in front of a group is like not really feeling exciting for you or it's too exciting. you know, that could be a really good, and you actually make the most money on one-on-ones. So lucrative wise, I would say one-on-ones and retreats are kind of like where financially you make a pretty good.
Yeah. Profit. I would say also like outdoor classes because if you have a group that comes consistently, you could have more than once a week. You could have seven classes a week.
It's true.
And you're having 10 people in a class, each person paying even $20.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
It is. And it's all, and it's all to you because you don't have to pay to the studio or the retreat center. Really good point. That's a really good way to make it. So if you live in a part of the world where it's constantly warm and nice.
Israel. During COVID.
Baja.
During COVID, I mean.
Outdoor, right? Everything was outdoor.
Everything was outdoor. Yeah. And let me tell you, the money was good.
Yeah. I know. It was really. And there's something magical about practicing outside. And like, you know, there's so many scientific things about like, you know, earthing where you're like getting all the minerals and the, you know, all the energy from the earth directly into your body, into your feet.
Practicing outside is the best.
You know,
it's the best. Definitely.
Yeah. If you live somewhere where you can do that, do that.
Yeah.
And then there's being like a teacher trainer, you know? And so being a teacher trainer is, it takes you, you have to have a certain number of years being a, just like a teacher, yoga teacher.
How many years?
I believe it's 2 years for the first level of certification. So to be a 200-hour teacher trainer, you have to have taught for at least 2 years. You can't even apply for this position until you've at least taught for 2 years.
And I think it's like 1,000 hours.
And 1,000 hours on top of that. Mm. So within those 2 years, you have to have taught 1,000 hours, which is almost like 5 days a week when you do the math. And add it up, it's about like 1 hour class 5 days a week for 2 years. So you know, if that's not your thing, then like 3, 4, 5 years down the line, maybe that's when you realize you want to be a teacher trainer. Mm-hmm. Or maybe just a position comes, you know, you're working somewhere and you get asked, like you and I, and then it happens for you. Say yes. Like, yeah, yeah, and I almost didn't.
Yeah, let's talk about this fear. Like, because so many times we have to, like, the door opens up to us, but we don't feel ready.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of had, if I remember correctly, like, opening your studio was a very,
very
interesting process for you. Maybe you can speak about that. What would you say to somebody in that position?
It was so emotional. It was like probably the most vulnerable and emotional I've felt in a long time. Just like putting myself out there. And being not super business savvy myself, I just wanted it to organically happen. And so luckily, you know, I'm still working at Yandara. I still love working here and I'm very thankful to be a part of this teaching staff and community so that I didn't have to stress and worry about like that being my only source of income in the very beginning. So I was, thankfully I didn't have that pressure, but I had this like emotional kind of like vulnerability pressure that I have felt. Mm-hmm. And that, so last year was our first season. This, you know, 2022-23 has been our second season and we've had a phenomenal season. It's just been really amazing. I know. I know. I've been so happy. Like our community has just been really into the space that we created, to the classes that we've been offering. And we just had such a wonderful season this year. It was just so inspiring. But last year was like really a big lesson. You know, I learned a lot about kind of like my ego of being a yoga teacher and kind of like expecting people to be like, yeah, like, oh, you know, she's been teaching for 14 years. Like, you know, like just expected people to just be there.
Yeah.
Without like doing anything or putting my time in, you know? So it was just like what you were saying, it was like cleaning the floors. And so for me, it wasn't cleaning the floors, but it was like understanding that like, okay, some of our classes are going to have 1, 2, 3 people. And where this year it was like really great, like 10 people minimum, like most every class, you know what I mean? Just like really consistent group of people. I had a couple of days where I was completely maxed out, running around trying to find extra props and space to fill people, to fit them in, you know, like we had some days where we were just like,
yeah. So what kept you going in the beginning when it was hard to believe that things are going to get better?
Probably just trust in knowing that I'm doing what I wanted to be doing. You know what I mean? Trusting like that water path where it's like, I'm putting in the work now. Like you were saying, like you have to put in the work. You can't just be like, oh, you know, like, so I would show up, I would plan my classes, I would clean the space, I would have all the props ready, everything set. And then, you know, if one person came, I would still just teach that one person.
Yeah.
And thankfully, there weren't many days like that, but there were days. There was days where people didn't come to any, you know, like no one showed up to certain classes last season. Whereas this season, we had a really great year. We didn't have any of that. We had just full classes. So it was hard in the beginning last year to trust that, but because I knew I was doing what I wanted to be doing,
like
I wanted
you were following your
heart. I was following my heart.
Yeah,
I was following my heart in creating a space for me and my family to be able to offer these things to the public, because Yandara is kind of like a private school, and we try to interface a little bit, but we're a pretty private organization, and so with this growing community that sometimes I'm challenged by has also given us this ability.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah. So it's a love hate. So it's like, you know, when I first moved here, I wouldn't have been able to do this because there wasn't enough people that would consistently come and spend money and practice.
Right.
And now there is.
Right.
And I've really been grateful for that this year. And just some amazing people that are so consistent in our community. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I've really learned and like been thinking about this last year, even since our last talk, it's just like this dedication of yoga, right? And I was kind of talking about it in the beginning, is your dedication of like choosing this career path, doing the work, and being humble around the fact that there's gonna be a kind of like a, what's, I don't know, not like a learning curve, but yeah, yes, a learning curve. And there's gonna be like a certain amount of time where it might not feel super easy at first. It might not feel really, really good. But luckily I'd been teaching long enough that I knew I wanted this. I wanted this for my family. I wanted this for the community, really. Mm-hmm. You know, we have kids classes and like a mommy and me sing-along class now. And, you know,
I think that's important to mention, because in the beginning we were saying like, we started teaching yoga and then we were offered to be yoga teachers.
Yeah.
Which is like the ideal. But
it is the ideal. Yeah.
Obviously, I take that as like little sparks. Of, yeah. But you know what? Little arrows on the path. Like little this, arrows, this is yeah. the path. But there are certain points on the path, or like segments of the path, that there are no arrows, and
you might feel a little lost.
Yes. And you feel like the it's actually dark. Like you mm-hmm. have no idea where you're going. You don't see anything. Yeah. You don't know what is the next move to make. And in those moments, our belief and also our connection to kind of like our intuition
yeah.
and our internal guidance system is what we need to learn to rely on.
Yes, I 100% agree.
So I think that that's a really important point that you brought up here. So even being a yoga teacher for 14 years, even in that place, you had to kind of, you know, go through the growing pains of birthing something new.
Yeah. And that's how it felt. It really felt like the growing pains of birthing something new. You know, I felt uncomfortable. I felt anxious. I'd be up in the night thinking about things, you know, not necessarily like my classes, but more like the business, you know, and thinking about what I want it to be. And you know, I had some teachers coming in and people asking me, and I was kind of trying to filter out and find the right people for La Dicha. And this woman named Yael, with an I, not a Y.
I know.
She came and she really just kind of, it was like me, my sister and her, we all connected so instantly, and our kids know each other. And it was just like, so with her, all this community, we all came together, and now we have other teachers, and it feels really good. All of us have been teaching for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. But there is that process of just like trusting, right? And that's what was hard for me at first. It's like, am I making the right choice? You know,
yeah,
da, 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 all these things. And
all these questions.
All these questions, so many questions. Yeah. I mean, so much doubt and so many questions.
Yeah.
But then what really was is when people did come and they showed up and they kept showing up, and sometimes they didn't. Sometimes people would come and I'd be like, that was the best class. And I'd never see them again. You know, and you're like, okay. And in your brain, you're like, what did I do? What did I say? I thought they loved it. They told me they loved it. Mm-hmm. And after that happens a couple of times, you're like, okay, this is just the nature of like business, really.
Yeah.
And so not taking it personal and just trusting that, yes, you're doing the best you can, you know.
And as long as you're aligned with how it feels, like your internal guidance system, then it will be supported.
Yeah.
I really want to talk about what it actually is to be a full-time yoga teacher.
Yeah.
We've had different experiences because, as you said, you've been here at Yandara, which is a different format than, let's say, a
studio teacher.
City kind of mm-hmm. yoga teacher.
Yeah.
So maybe you can tell about your experience and how you made it sustainable. And then I'll tell about mine.
Yeah, that sounds great. I love that. Yeah. You know, thankfully, you know, the owners of Yandara really saw something in me, and I started here as like a, you know, an assistant teacher, and then I became more of like a lead teacher. And in the last couple of years, I've really transitioned a lot into like the 300-hour trainings and the modules that we offer. And so like, I feel like over time, you know, this would be like my 15th season. I started really simple, you know, it was like just basic you know, basic postures. You're like, okay, just like learning the foundation of these basic postures. And then you grow from there. And I remember I got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2016. And right around then I was mostly doing like vinyasa, power flow. I loved all that. I loved just being like, And I realized my nervous system needed something a little slower, a little different, because that's what multiple sclerosis is. It targets your nervous system. So I started practicing a lot of restorative yoga with Allison.
And incredible Allison.
I know, the incredible Allison. And that really just shifted. Like I felt this big shift, right? So there's been these like things every like 4, 5, 6 years, some new form of teaching, whether it's physical, like an asana. So I went from like kind of like really liking vinyasa power to then restorative. And then I started really feeling into pranayama. Like, just like so much pranayama. Started just like devouring books on pranayama breath practice. And really feeling the effects of that. And then through pranayama, I've gotten more into like the aspect of like kind of like a seated meditation process, because that was always hard for me. I'm a fast mover, fast talker. My brain goes fast, like a lot of us maybe. And so, you know, physical asana and breath bring my body and my nervous system to a place where it's so much easier and more effortless to meditate. And in the last couple of seasons, I've been working with Christopher and Dayanam in the breath and meditation. I had a really nice one over the winter we taught in. The sound healing, which I started doing probably 3 or 4 years ago now, was the next kind of big thing. And it was just like blew the lid off everything for me.
And in what way?
In like just so much inspiration. Like my whole family is very musical, right?
Yeah.
And like yoga music.
Yeah.
And I know all the mantras and the kirtans and like, but I don't play an instrument. And the the sound allows me that. So the restorative yoga and the sound healing, for me, they just go so good together. So those have been the last things, the sound healing, breath and meditation. And then in the last like year and a half or so, I've really switched into like this deep, slow hatha style practice that's very, very, I probably teach, I make jokes. I'm like, it's like yin hatha. So it's kind of got a yin yoga, which is this slow, deep kind of like centered feeling, like a slower practice, but we're doing, you know, hatha postures. So like chair, warrior one,
chair,
crescent lunge.
It's not an easy one to hold for a
I know. Long time. And I like time it like you do with yin. And so it's like, and I'm looking into the body and looking at the way that you hold your body, starting with the feet and working into the pelvis. And so it's like, we're learning about what part of the body is supporting one other part of the body. And so we have this tendency, these patterns where we hold. And so we're always holding in one part and we don't realizing it where we're doing like, you know, warrior two and you're like contracting in the side of your neck and your shoulder. But where it's coming from is the feet. And so what you need to think more about is your feet and your pelvic floor. So most everything that I'm always talking about now is like feet and pelvic floor. I'm like, come back to your feet and your pelvic floor.
The base.
The base.
The root chakra.
The root chakra. And so I probably teach like 10 to 12 postures in a 90 minute.
Wow.
But they're
that's
strong. Yeah. It's been like a hold. It's like all about like holding and strength and like really working into one part of the body. And so I haven't been teaching really like flowery, elaborate postures that much lately.
Do you feel that you can sustain yourself financially by being a yoga teacher?
I can, yes, here in Mexico. I wonder because of the cost of living. So that's a thing that I think about within being a yoga teacher and being in this balance of excess right? Mm-hmm. And so like if you're living in a yogic fashion mm-hmm. and you're everything is simple and consistent and you're not needing more than what you have, then yes, I believe mm. yes, you can afford and you can live off of your yoga teaching.
So how many classes can you do a week?
I try to limit myself to 2 a day.
Mm-hmm. So about like 10 or 15?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
10 or 12.
10 or 12. I try to limit to like 10 or 12 a week. Mm-hmm. For my energy levels.
Yeah.
Other people, maybe they have a lot more energy. For me with MS is I have to really conserve. Mm-hmm. Conserve my energy. And I am a very... I'm somebody that really... I put all my heart into it when I teach mm-hmm. and I'm very present and I'm very much with my student and I'm trying to, whether it's a one-on-one or a group setting. And so I do feel not really physically tired. Mm-hmm. I feel emotionally, energetically tired after teaching more than 2 classes Definitely. A day.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. It is really much more than telling people where to put their foot or yeah. their pelvis, you know,
yeah.
which is the base of it. But it's much more than that. It's looking at another person and curating an experience
yeah.
on all the different levels.
Mm-hmm.
Which takes so much of a teacher. I can speak to myself. I do it joyfully. Like that's what I want to be doing with my time.
Yeah.
And yet it does take a lot.
It does.
I want to kind of speak yeah. about the experience of being a yoga teacher in a city.
So I like that.
Obviously the cost of living is higher.
Higher. Yeah. I know.
That's like just off the bat, especially Tel Aviv is a really expensive city. Rent is expensive, food, everything is expensive. So before I came to Yandara, I was teaching full time and I was exhausted by the time I came to Yandara. I was almost at the point where I was like, I don't want to teach any more yoga classes yeah. anymore because I was... doing so many classes in order to be able to sustain like just a very basic life, yeah. not, you know, a luxurious life. Because most of my classes were studio classes and private classes. Actually, before I came here, it was COVID and I was doing, like I had my own group and that was very profitable.
Yeah.
But I was still doing almost 20 classes a week, sometimes even more, like sometimes 23 classes a week.
Wow.
Which is a huge amount.
It's a huge amount.
Sometimes like 5 classes a day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I'm saying this not because, honestly, if that feels good to you, then all power to you. To me, it didn't feel good.
No.
It was too much. And the reason I'm saying it is because I want to bring enough, like to bring this into the perspective of somebody who maybe wants to become a yoga teacher, that you have to think about it, that there is a limit to how many classes you can do a week in terms of your energy level.
Yeah. And the quality.
Exactly. Like I felt it's irresponsible mm-hmm. to come teach a class when you don't have any energy.
Yeah.
You have nothing to give.
Yeah.
And the whole description of being a yoga teacher is being in the position of giving something. You're giving the practice, the philosophy, you're transferring the information that you received from your teachers. Mm-hmm. But being in that position, like in order to be able to give something, you have to be full yourself. So yeah. that was one thing that I wanted to say, that I was at a point, it was also combined with like, being in a position, it was hard for me to say no. So if somebody would ask for another class, I would usually, like, I would say I have the time, like I'm free in that hour. So I'll just say yes, but I've learned to not do that. I was also teaching on weekends and I was teaching almost 7 days a week.
Oh my gosh.
Now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
I don't know how I did it.
Yeah, you just become so depleted.
Depleted. Mm-hmm. So in order to be a better teacher in the classes that you do take, you need to also know which classes not to take. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important point. And kind of a place where I arrived within myself is that maybe in order to, again, with the reverence to the practice, because it's also disrespectful to the practice to mm-hmm. show up in this way for a class.
Yeah.
Right? Because mm-hmm. you're somebody is paying you money that they worked hard to earn.
Mm-hmm.
They are trusting you in such a vulnerable, sacred space. And, you know, having the intention of teaching a class because you need to earn the money. When I spoke about, I had a podcast conversation with Christopher about the business of yoga, and he mentioned something so beautiful that we shouldn't even take money for this practice.
We shouldn't, but...
But that's the reality of our life.
Yeah.
So having another source of income while you're being a yoga teacher preserves the sacredness of the practice.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to be in the position where you teach a class because you need the income.
Yes.
And that's just the reality of our life, because we have rent to pay and we need to pay for food and there's the cost of living and all of that. We need to charge a fee for these classes. It's also about the rental of the space and all of the things.
Maintenance of the space, the props. It's like so much.
Exactly. But being able to be responsible for your presence, showing up in the class, and that might mean that you don't rely completely on being a yoga teacher as your income. I think that's a really important point to think about.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. When I first started working at Yandara, I worked in the office as well for years, for a really, really a long time, probably 8 years. Mm-hmm. 8 years I worked as the administrator and as a teacher.
Yeah.
And so after about that much time, well, I got married and then my husband was working. So we had supplemental income. So I made it. But I,
I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So we made it. But it is, it definitely, you know, most teachers that I know in the beginning of their careers, for at least like the first 10 years or so, have some other supplemental income, because it takes a while to get to that point where people value your teaching and they will pay higher amounts.
Exactly.
So you don't have to work as many classes. You get that same amount in like one or two classes.
Mm-hmm.
But in the beginning, like you said, I like that. You don't want to, you know, lose the integrity of the actual teaching,
mm-hmm.
which... In a wonderful world, you know, maybe we'd be doing more like barter. But like it's hard in the city. Here at my studio in Pescadero, I actually have been doing a lot of barter this year. Like people will bring me like eggs. Like, for example, for eggs are very expensive, right?
I love barter.
Me too. And like we'll do trades of massage or like body work, right?
Yeah.
People bring me papayas. They bring me trees, like baby trees that I can plant all around La Dicha to improve the space.
Yeah.
And so, you know, or even like, luckily I'm at a place where I can offer like people, you know, I have a few people that... in the town that come from town, and I just say, pay whatever you can pay.
Mm, that's beautiful.
You know, like maybe it's 50 pesos, which is like $2.50.
Yeah.
And it's not everybody is like that. You know, I don't let every single student, but because I have other people that can afford to pay our price, then I can allow other students to come in that can't. And so, you know, it's like that with your life and your teaching career. Maybe you have this other supplemental income so that you can teach and it doesn't have that pressure and that weighing down, like you're saying, and that like dragging all your energy just to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Then it's no longer fun.
Exactly. I also want to mention that being a yoga teacher is so much more than the physical asana practice.
Oh yeah.
So just again, opening the view of what being a yoga teacher means. And same as you, I've kind of been going through this evolution in my practice and in my teaching throughout the years. I'm already 5.5 years after my first teacher training. You made it.
5 years is a big mile marker. It's like you learn a lot in those first 5 years.
So much.
Yeah, so much.
And now I'm way more drawn to the philosophy side, yeah, as you can probably guess with this podcast. Mm-hmm. And speaking about being a yoga teacher in the fuller sense of the word. So you don't have to be teaching physical yoga practices or yoga practices in order to be a yoga teacher.
No.
There are so many different things. Like now we have online, you can do videos, mm-hmm, of asana practice or philosophy. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, there's like YouTube and Instagram. You can do, there's apps that you can do. Mm-hmm. There are courses, online courses that you can do. You can do courses in person. Mm-hmm. They can be asana, they can be philosophy, mm-hmm, they can be meditation. You know, there's so many, yeah, aspects to being a yoga teacher that even if you feel like asana practice is not your calling, you can still be a yoga teacher,
yeah,
in so many different ways.
And that's actually a really great way to kind of like market yourself at, you know, mm-hmm, because there is a lot of people that they just teach asana. You know, that's like their thing. And that's wonderful. That's how majority of people get into the practice of yoga, is, yeah, through asana, right?
Right.
But then there's like the breath and meditation is just like booming in the world right now. That breath and meditation practice out there. I mean, I just feel like so many people I see doing, you know, like these mini retreat kind of things has really been getting big, where you do like a day retreat even, or like, yeah, a Saturday, Sunday, you know,
or a few hours workshops.
Yeah. A few hours workshops. And, mm-hmm, it's just about this practice of breath or meditation or the philosophy and, mm-hmm, and, one thing that I felt like COVID really gave to the world was the benefit of slowing down and not having to be so physical. Yeah. So with these different styles of practice, you can really customize, you know, there's such a health and wellness movement out there in the world, you know.
Yeah. Huge.
Huge. And so it doesn't have to be physical asana. Mm-hmm. There's really a big calling, I feel like, in the world for that right now, of teachers that are going beyond just the physical asana. Like, it's been westernized for, you know, what, like 40, 50 years now. I feel like in the 70s is kind of like when it became pretty westernized. It, yeah, brought from the East to the West and like market, you know what I mean? Like became like Western yoga teachers. Like there wasn't before that, yeah, really too
and
much.
It also became more accepted.
Yes, more accepted, not like a weird woo-woo, yeah, Eastern thing.
Yeah.
And so now it's been like so many years of that some of these more of practices that weren't accepted, yeah, of the philosophy and the meditation and the breathing techniques, and they're really being
embraced.
Sought after and, yeah, embraced, yeah, you know?
I think it's because have been so many studies proving the benefits of these, because us in the West, we need to see the data.
Yes,
the scientific proof.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's just such a beautiful time right now to be a yoga teacher, really, you, yeah, know, and find these other facets of teaching besides just asana. I feel like are where a lot of people are really excelling in that as a yoga teacher career choice.
Yeah.
Apart from just like teaching in a studio, you know, 9 to 5 kind of a thing.
Right. I also want to say, like, don't worry about the fact that there's a lot of yoga teachers. There's enough students for everybody. Yes. If this is your path, the universe is going to support you financially, emotionally, studially,
yeah,
you know, like you're going to find enough support in order to make it sustainable.
Yes, for sure. I 100% believe that too. Yeah, the universe will bring it to you if it's meant to be.
Exactly.
You just got to say yes. Do your work. Be dedicated.
And continue with your own practice.
That's really like the foundation of it, is that consistency and dedication to this style of teaching, and not just the asana, but the showing up for yourself. Like I described it. So I described it to my mom. I was like, okay. I was like, Mom, yoga is about dedication. She goes, really? You know, because for my mom, yoga is about love. Oh. And it is about love. It's about union and love. But at the same time, it's like, you have to show up for that love. You have to do your practice. You have to practice the niyamas and the yamas. You have to show up and practice and be a teacher and be dedicated. It's like a form of dedication.
Definitely.
And so if you have that, if you have that desire and that dedication, it will happen. Yes. For sure.
Amber, is there anything else that you want to mention or add? I think we got a lot of important topics.
Yeah, we got some good details in there for sure. I would just say, just trust in your heart and trust in your intuition. Like I love when you said that, because I'm such a follower of intuition, and that little part inside you that's not the logical brain, mm-hmm. right? And you just feel this place of like, you just know, you know, I don't know even how to describe it. It's such
a knowing.
Yeah, it's a knowing, and it's like a just without knowing logically, you know what I mean? It's like your cells know, your spirit and like the makeup of your body knows, and it's saying yes, and just disregard what the brain says.
I actually looked up the definition of intuition, and it was exactly that. It was like a knowing that isn't logical.
Yes. Yeah. And so trust that, and trust in the doors opening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My lovely, lovely Amber.
Thank you, Yael.
Thank you so much. Now, after this time to nurture your mind and your spirit, we invite you to take a moment to consider others. A kind wish might come to mind. Know that what we learn becomes more valuable when we apply it and share it with others. So share this episode on Instagram stories, tag Yandara and I, or share with a loved one so that more people can benefit from it. Our hope is that the search will lead you home to who you already are, to what was always there. We'll be back next week with more inspiration, honest conversation, and insight into the energetic world around us. Thank you for listening and watching.